Hi, everyone. It's Eric. Wanted to let you know that this episode is going to be guest hosted by Hattie Hawks. And you may remember Hattie from previous episodes that we've done. And she is, she's fabulous. She's got some great insights, some ideas that she wants to get out to our audience, being you, as well as her audience. And we're so excited about what she's going to bring to the Spirit of EQ podcast. And we hope that, you'll recommend it to others.
Hey, welcome to the show. Hattie Hawks here. Excited to have Dr. Ken Yeager back with us today. We are doing more of part two when we talk about trauma. For those of you who heard the last episode, for those of you who are just tuning in, I myself am a journalist, a trauma survivor. I am a mother of two children, and I am an advocate for those who have experienced complex trauma and an advocate for the learning of neuroscience and nervous system regulation. Okay. It is not a mainstream topic just yet. You are one of those experts who have lived and breathed it. You understand the importance that comes with knowing this important information because it's life-changing and it helps people who have struggled with their own lives to essentially live again. A lot of the times we will go to the doctor and there's, in some cases, maybe this is, there are certain right paths, but we'll do, like sometimes we'll take medication and think that that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my quick fix. That's going to work. You have GI issues. Well, then you start going down this like one rabbit hole thinking that there's going to be a fix there. But in reality, your gut has a lot to do with your brain.
Yeah. The microbiome is part of your brain.
Right. And and sometimes you get into this, well, like, we really need to learn about what it means to be human and have a better understanding of how humans are just meant to operate in regular life. Yeah. What are we really capable of?
Mm-hmm.
What is asking too much? Because we look at other species and they have, like, granted, like, it's totally different, I know.
Yeah.
But we seem to have an understanding of how their lives are supposed to work out.
Mm-hmm. But not for ourselves.
No.
No. It's fascinating to me when we talk about stress and we start talking about, you know, inflammatory cytokines and you know, cortisol levels in the body, and what happens to the human being when all of this inflammation is going on.
Right.
So now you mentioned gastric upset.
Yeah.
And GERD,
mm-hmm.
you know, gastroesophageal
reflux,
what have you, heartburn, if you will. But that inflammation is the pathway to hypertension, to gastric disturbances, to messing up the microbiome, to diabetes, to other heart diseases, potentially cancers.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think, oh, you know, don't tell me not to burn the candle at both ends, tell me where to get more wax.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, yeah, you can add more wax, but the impact is going to be greater on your physical well-being.
Right.
You know, you are going to go down the pathway. And people always talk about weight, and I'm carrying my weight in my gut, and that's inflammation.
Okay.
That's a direct result of inflammation. And the more the adipose tissue forms around the major organ systems, the less able those organ systems are able to function.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sends you down the pathway. And you know, you've got renal failure, your kidneys don't function as well, your liver doesn't function as well, your heart doesn't function as well, when that doesn't function as well, your lungs don't function as well, and it becomes this cascade effect on your well-being.
And if you were to explain how it does that, because I love to make it into a visual so that people can see how it physically happens, because I still think when we talk about emotional regulation, it's almost that we have a way of detaching from the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to just be like, okay, whatever. I don't know why it's so easy, but I feel like today we're more in a position where even if we see it, we don't necessarily believe it. So I'm just going to try and paint a picture here.
Okay.
The way that I envision how our emotions impact our physical feelings and our bodies, like when it comes to pain and inflammation, just chronic illness, is just, okay, so you experience this stressful situation and your body's flooded with all of the chemicals that or hormones, whatnot, that you spoke about. And when do you get to the point where those chemicals they're released, but then they're like trapped in your body to cause this? What is that process? Why does that happen? Does that have to do with fight or flight, where you suppress your system?
It's absolutely tied to that.
Okay.
You know, with most injuries, we have pain.
Yeah.
And pain says, don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pain is your friend. But with the inflammation, with the inflammatory diseases, the pain doesn't come until the damage is done.
Right.
Right?
So your warning sign is a little late.
So the warning sign happens about 2 years too late.
Okay.
So this isn't the kind of thing that you can just say, you know, I'm fine. I'm okay. No, you don't. You can't. There are many of the major organ systems that don't have any warning sign until it's gotten to the point now where you are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Heart being one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of those signs? Because and I've read here and there where we store certain kinds of trauma or where we store certain emotions.
Mm-hmm.
They go to specific places in your body.
Well, a lot of people, if you pay attention to your body, where do you keep your stress? Do you clench your jaw?
Yes.
Are your back of your neck muscles very tense? Your shoulders very tense?
That would definitely, they've gotten better. But yes, it's definitely like, I would say that's where I would tense first.
That's where you tensed first. Mm-hmm. And that's where most people tense first.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have bruxism, you grind your teeth at night.
Okay.
You know, if your dentist says, we might want to get you a bite block, because you're grinding on your teeth and you've actually, you know, if you break a tooth, you know, if you break one of your molars or you crack one of your molars because you're grinding your teeth at night, that's an early warning sign. That's a red flag.
Okay.
If you have muscle tension or neck aches on an ongoing basis, headaches on an ongoing basis, if you get rashes or your skin breaks out, that's an early warning sign that you are getting overloaded with stress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the things that begin to show up. And it's always amazing to me that, you know, people say, you know, well, I've got this illness and I can't fight genetics. It's like, yeah, I understand, but genetics are of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You put yourself in a position of being run down enough that the opportunity existed for this disease to emerge. You didn't put the right fuel in your body. You didn't eat the right foods, because we're all hurrying so much. We're getting fast food. We're not eating the right food at the right time. We're drinking too much caffeine, not getting enough water, that these things begin to show up. And it's much, much better to catch the early warning signs. And the best way to do that is to get to your physician's office, get your yearly physical, get your blood work, take a look at the blood work. Is there anything out of line in your blood work? And talk with your physician about what is that? What is that about? Where is that coming from? Because it's too easy to ignore ourselves and to do extra work than it is to take half a day off to go get a blood draw and see our PCP.
Right.
Or to go see our dentist, or to go get our eyes checked. But those are your warning signs. Those are your early warning signs.
And then what about, because nutritional deficiencies has been something that I've recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Drop the water. When when, and there's a lot of conversation around prescriptions and how that can really ruin your gut,
mm-hmm.
and how it can also cut down on certain nutrients or how well you absorb it. And I'm not sure how much of an argument there is around this, but it seems like holistic wellness and Western medicine just don't want to be friends necessarily.
Correct.
When, at least from my opinion and in my experience, I've found both to be very useful.
Mm-hmm.
In this stage of my life, I've found the holistic route to be more helpful to me,
mm-hmm.
Because I see where I'm falling short in certain nutrients. I'm able to use supplements that mm-hmm. help with that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't, in my opinion, take away the need for Western medicine and the way that we do things and the science that we've been able to develop in order to help people through things.
Right.
But they both seem to be very important to our overall well-being. And so I'm sure, like, when it comes to certain necessary vitamins, that impacts our brain health, our ability to cope with these kinds of things.
It absolutely does. And again, is finding the balance that works for you. Each of us are different. And you have to put the two together. So if you're on a statin, that may leach out some of the bone density. So you might have to add a calcium supplement, or you might have to add CoQ10 to help with cholesterol, mm-hmm. healthy cholesterol levels, are a couple of the easy examples of this. But it's finding the balance that works for you and understanding that, yeah, the two sides typically have issues, but if you can find somebody who understands that this is a priority to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, you work with the kind of care provider that understands what it is that you want to accomplish. And I, you know, health is a team sport.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You can't just go to your physician and say, fix me.
Right.
It's a really terrible approach to health. We have to be responsible for what's going on and take direction and take the direction for us and see what works,
mm-hmm.
rather than saying, you know, well, I'm just not going to do that. Not a good approach.
Well, it's not good for your life. It's your choice.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know that I would go there. So you've got to really, really look at it as a team sport, and you've got to assemble your team, and you've got to work with your team to find the approach that works the best for you. And certainly there's a lot more to health than just medication and, you know, nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
There is exercise. There is being cognizant of where one should be at what time in their life. There is understanding traps, triggers. There's understanding what my stressors are. There's understanding job challenges. This all of this comes together. I have watched, you know, mental illness for 30 years of my career. And the amazing thing is mental illness and substance use disorders are the kind of diseases, they're not the only diseases, but they're some of the best diseases that we rationalize our way around, say there's nothing wrong with me.
Right.
You know, when in fact, yeah, you probably are clinically depressed, or yeah, that anxiety and that heart palpitation, that's probably something that could be treated. But these are the kind of illnesses that say, no, that's nothing.
And isn't it kind of a catch-22, because it's almost as if it's part of your mental illness that you ignore it.
Of course.
And you rationalize around it.
Mm-hmm.
And I attribute that to feelings of shame, embarrassment, all of these emotions that are very human. Mm-hmm. We will not avoid them in our lifetime. They will happen.
Yeah.
And rather than looking at them and understanding their purpose,
mm-hmm.
we push them further away.
Right. So let's, right now, let's just take a little bit of a step back. First order symptoms.
Yeah.
First order symptoms are the physical symptoms. So you get a cold.
Yeah.
The first order symptoms, runny nose, watery eyes, stuffiness, cough, achy, hurt all over. Second order symptoms are defense mechanisms. When you first start to get a cold, you deny it.
Yeah.
Or you rationalize it. Yeah. Or you minimize it.
It might be allergies.
It could be, anything, right?
Yeah.
So defense mechanisms, rationalization, minimizing, externalizing, displacing, all of those factors come into play. But then there's the third order symptoms. And the third order symptoms are the emotions, the shame, the guilt, mm-hmm. the fear, the hurt, the loss. And, you know, whenever somebody is dealing with something like depression, they'll minimize the symptoms. So the second order symptoms jump up to minimize the first order symptoms. Yeah. But then as the illness progresses, then the third order symptoms begin to show up. Shame
mm-hmm.
and guilt and remorse and hurt and loss. And it's not until we get all the way down to that that people actually seek treatment.
Yeah. Because that's when their life really becomes impacted. It's
when things begin to fall apart.
Yeah.
So think about whenever you've got things going in your life, think about what's the first order symptoms, what's the second order symptoms, and what are the third order symptoms. So the physical symptoms, the defense mechanisms that you minimize them with, and then the emotions that come out. And please, please, please don't wait till you get all the way down to the bottom.
Right. Yeah. You will pay for it in many different ways.
I have never seen a person in the hospital, and I've worked all of my adult lives in hospitals, that said, I wish I worked more.
Yeah.
Never once.
The one thing that jumped out to me, just a few minutes ago, because we were talking about all these excuses, and I just wanted to ask, because, you know, as we age, yes, things happen, things change.
Mm-hmm.
But where I'm just so curious about how trauma and emotional regulation play into the idea of, well, I'm just getting older. This is just getting older. Because you see memory loss, you see just cognitive slowdown. You're not as good at the things that you necessarily were. But then there are people who are aging, and that's not necessarily happening.
Right, right. Well, each person has their own path. But certainly, trauma has an impact on mental acuity. And that's really what it's coming down to. And who knows what the environmental factors are,
yeah,
that are leading to all of these to these neurodegenerative disorders,
right,
that we're seeing so many more of,
yeah,
than we'd seen before. But people who are always on edge, who are living with the stress, living with the trauma, are more susceptible to neurologic disorders.
Mm-hmm.
They're more susceptible to memory loss. They're more susceptible to failing executive functioning, because what you're talking about is executive functioning.
Yes.
And as we age, the frontal lobe of our brain begins to atrophy. And as that begins to atrophy, then we begin to lose memories about things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but I spend a good third of my day walking around the house saying, where the hell is my cell
phone? Yeah. I'm like, I swear, I just had my keys. Where's my phone?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or wasn't I supposed to do something at 2 o'clock?
Yeah.
You know, those are the kind of things that, yeah, they are normal. But what's really interesting is that, again, this isn't something that you see in yourself. This is something that other people are probably going to point out to you.
Yeah.
Or it's something that you're going to see after you miss something. And you start becoming aware and thinking, what else am I missing? What else is going on? What else is beginning to fall off the radar here? And so there are signs that show up. But certainly if you don't address the trauma, there will be a negative impact. If you don't address the stress, there will be a negative impact.
And let's talk about that memory loss just within trauma, like how you identify if in fact that is pointed towards trauma. For me, I'm 35 years old. Mm-hmm. And there are certain, I can pinpoint periods of time where I just don't remember it that well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So what's that about?
Well, certainly we talked about the neurotransmitters.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you have inside of your brain these dendrites. They look like if you hold your fingers out and you've got them next to one another. Those are, consider your arm being the axon in your brain.
Okay.
The hand leading down to the fingers being the dendrites, and the gap, if you put your hands out and keep them about 2 inches apart, being the synapses.
Okay.
Where the neurotransmitter comes down the axon into the dendrites, and then a neurotransmitter is fired and it carries a message across the synapse. And if you're in a hypervigilant state, the message comes down with a large charge of energy and it gets to the dendrites and it's fired off and it arcs and it sparks up and down.
Okay.
And it's real violent, like an earthquake looks on a Richter scale.
Okay.
And sometimes it overshoots what it's supposed to go to.
Okay.
It doesn't connect to the other side, to the receptor site. So you've got the sending site and the receptor site. Sometimes if it comes at a high rate of speed, it doesn't connect with the receptor site.
Okay.
And when that happens, you don't remember. And when you're in high states of stress, when you're in hypervigilance, those neurotransmitters are firing at such a high rate that oftentimes the message doesn't get communicated. Or you've depleted so many of the neurotransmitters and the message doesn't get transmitted because there's not enough to carry it across the synapse.
And then, so if you do, like say someone, I was watching a video the other day and someone was talking about how they didn't have a lot of memories of their childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's like a certain specific time.
Yeah.
Is that what's happening in those moments?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that part of a protection thing of our brain or simply like a, just what has physically happened to it?
Mm-hmm.
Where you would need to do whatever level of work it was in order to build up the stamina for it to fire correctly.
So if you're under high levels of stress, and that could be as a child if you don't feel safe,
mm-hmm.
That can certainly lead to memory not being connected.
Okay.
And if there's a period of your life that is missing, it certainly is worth exploring.
Yeah.
What was going on at that time? Why is it that I can't remember second grade?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was there something going on in the home? Was there something going on in the neighborhood? Was there something going on in the classroom that could keep you from understanding what was going on or even remembering what was going on? And there have been lots of times that patients have said to me, I don't remember this year or that year or X number of years in my childhood. And then later they've come back and they've put it together.
Mm-hmm.
There was a trauma. And it could be anything from, you know, relatives passing away to abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everything in between. So it's important to understand that if you're under high levels of stress, if you're hypervigilant, if you're not functioning to your fullest emotionally, then memories are going to get lost. Executive functioning is not going to be online. Things are going to get missed. And most people just sit back and come to the realization that my life is falling apart.
Yeah. And some just can't prevent it from happening anymore. Yeah,
they can't. And sometimes it gets to a point where you've got to have somebody help you to find a path out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's too overwhelming. It's too big. And you're actually fighting an invisible monster and you don't know where to attack it.
Yeah. And it still feels like that to me sometimes. Mm-hmm. It depends on the day.
Sure.
It doesn't get as overwhelming as I have experienced within the last 2 years. Because when I learned about this, it was more on just I retained it as information. And I was like, oh, this makes me make so much more sense to me. Mm-hmm. But it didn't mean that I had actually integrated those tools to actually help me to rewire my brain.
Yes.
And to help heal my nervous system.
Right.
That took intentional work. And it's I literally, in order to do it, because my personality, if I have a goal, I'm going to reach it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to be that goal where I'm like, no, I am determined I'm going to do this. Yes. And so the last few years, my determination really centered around my nervous system, the rewiring of my brain, mm-hmm. understanding my emotional health and being able to communicate that to others. And so it's really been this inward process. But when you do that, you unravel to a degree.
You do.
And it's hard for people to understand, especially when you're me and I'm like, no, I'm going to, this is what I can focus on. It's this.
Mm-hmm.
And when I set out to do that, I knew it would be difficult, but I didn't understand how much of a full-time job it would feel like for me to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to be something that prevents anybody
right.
from starting their own journey. I had to get creative, and to a degree, I did not know what I was doing. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't mm-hmm. understand. I'm like, okay, so what am I going to do? Because I don't think the culture of the 9-to-5 is going to be something that I will be able to do. And in hindsight, definitely wouldn't have.
Right.
I also found out that I had chronic Lyme disease during the process, that was a detour.
Yes.
That was a detour for another day. I did not expect that to happen. But mm-hmm. what I did was I started my own LLC. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do what I can do. And I am going to rely on help from others where I have not ever felt comfortable asking for help from mm-hmm. others mm-hmm. in the past. And part of it was on a hope and a prayer. I'm like,
yeah, sure.
I understand that there's a level of experience here where I still very much can contribute in similar ways than I did in the past.
Yeah.
But the amount, the executive functioning that you talk about
mm-hmm.
is one of those things that you grapple with because, like I said, you know that you have functioned in a certain way before. And so there's this desire to want to be mm-hmm. able to do that and do mm-hmm. all of the things at the same time.
Yeah.
And I've, like, you know, I kind of managed to skate by. I've seen where there are gaps in the system where there could be better support there mm-hmm. for people mm-hmm. who struggle with complex trauma because their brain is the thing that doesn't work.
Right.
And certain systems, there's lots of red tape. There are a lot of forms
Lots
to fill
of
out. Mm-hmm. So many hurdles. And, you know, you don't expect that when you start it. So it is difficult, but I feel so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand myself so much more. I'm more honest with myself, which feels better than anything before.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I don't know if anyone's more dishonest with themselves than themselves.
Yeah.
Because self-abandonment is, like, it's a hard thing to come back. You try to love yourself after abandoning yourself.
Right. It's you can't do them back to back.
You can't.
No.
It is, it's a process. And so I send, like, my love and my compassion and my courage to anyone who heard some of this and is now questioning, okay, all right, well, what are my next steps? Mm-hmm. because it's not easy. But as you mentioned before, there's a certain period of time that it takes to get to a point where you do actually feel better. And what was that, like a year and a half?
About 18 to 24 months.
18 to 24 months. And if you can view it as, okay, I do know I just went through a really stressful experience. And then you think about, okay, well, when's that probably going to come back to bite me? Because it's going to.
Yeah.
And you have to be conscious of it.
So let me map out that 18
yeah,
to 24
please do.
Months. So there's the crash.
Yes.
And the crash is 7 to 10 to 15 days.
Okay.
And during that crash, you realize all your best plans, all your best thoughts landed you exactly where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So you realize you have to get help.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start reaching out for help. And when you become vulnerable and ask for help, it's really hard because you don't know who to trust.
100%. It is right? hard to trust.
It's so hard to trust, and you don't know who to trust.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do finally get to the point where you can reach out and you do begin to trust, then it's almost like a honeymoon phase where the weight feels like it's lifted off of your shoulders.
Yeah.
And the Calvary's coming and they're going to save me. And
it's all,
this is going to be a wonderful thing. And that lasts for about 45 to 120 days.
Okay.
And then 120 days to about 180 days, the neurotransmitters crash again. So during the honeymoon phase, you get the relief. And you start to eat better and you start to sleep better and the neurotransmitters begin to replenish themselves. And then at about 120 days to 180 days, the realization that, wait a minute, this isn't going to be a quick fix. And I'm going to have to focus like you focused.
Mm-hmm.
And as you so aptly noted, when you begin to focus, things begin to unravel.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
And the longer that you're in a recovery process, the more honest people are with you about how your interactions have been,
mm-hmm.
which sometimes can be difficult and hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
So that 120 to 180 is a very difficult time. And that's the time where there's a potential to fall off a cliff because people, they turn to substances to relax themselves. They mm-hmm. turn to older behaviors like, finding a different relationship to feel better about mm-hmm. yourself instead of focusing on the only relationship right. that matters, which is the one that you have with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that 120 to 180 days is a really up and down period of time where it's just like a little headway and then a little backslide, and a little headway and a little backslide. But if you track it over time, there's always progression. Around 180 to the year point, somewhere in there, so the 6 month to the 1 year point, comes the realization of, what am I going to be when I grow up?
Yeah. It's so funny. Like, I didn't realize that there was such a roadmap. I knew there was a forming one, but being able to break it down into days is mm-hmm. is huge. And as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, all of this, this tracks, all of it.
Yeah.
It is how it goes.
The science and the human body are mathematical.
And I was terrified of math.
Oh.
Fascinating,
yeah.
I don't know if it was that I was terrified. I just hated it.
Yeah.
I was
math is not something that comes easily. Yeah. Or intuitively.
Well, my son is a genius with math, which is, I'm like, I don't know how this happened, but, it just depends, right? Intuitively, some are going to be advanced, and then there's lots of other reasons why people may struggle with numbers and math. Yeah.
Yeah. So the what am I going to be when I grow up is the opportunity. Because I will say that it's never too late to have a happy childhood. You can be what you can dream if you're willing to work for it.
Yeah.
I remember hearing so many times, you can be whatever you want to be. Well, yeah, but you got to have the resources to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's absolutely true. You can be whatever you want to be as long as you're willing to do the work to get to that point. And that is work, and it requires being vulnerable, and it requires continuing to rely on that help, and it requires continuing to be self-vulnerable mm-hmm. and to work on the relationship with yourself. And, you know, so many people say, well, when will I have a relationship? It's like, when your relationship with yourself is good, then another relationship will happen. But if you're just trying to make it happen in between now and then, it's not going to work out.
Well, and you attract what you are.
Unfortunately, there's nothing truer.
And sometimes then, like, so once you get into that not good relationship, or you just find yourself struggling over and over again, it's not meant to be a slight towards you. It's no. more of just an understanding of, okay, well, remember, this is a whole mirroring situation.
Exactly. You're getting back what you're putting out.
Right.
And it's unfortunately, that's just the laws of physics, is that you can't fight it.
I'll tell you what. I have never, like, I did not take physics. And when during this process, I'm like, has anyone else taken physics? What's happening in schools now? Like, are we paying attention to it? Because I really think it's valuable information. And it has a lot to do. It's just, it would help us understand us as a human species so much more.
It really
And I
would.
Had no idea.
Yeah, it really does, you know. And start with the simplest. A body at rest remains at rest.
Yeah.
A body at motion remains in motion. What are you doing? Where are you going? How are you making this happen? What do we need to do to fight the inertia so that we don't fall back? Because after the 365 days, you know, over and over and over again in my practice, I saw people that struggled and they worked really hard and really hard, only to then 3 to 5 years later fall into the same old pattern again.
It's super simple to fall into, though, too.
Super easy to fall into, and super comfortable. It's like an old friend,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's like your favorite pair of blue jeans. They just fall on. They fit right. They're right. Perfect. And you really have to guard against that. You really are never done growing.
And I just, it's such a good point, because when you say that, you have to understand that people who you love them, they frustrate you, they fall into like old behaviors, alcoholism, drug addicts, all these things that, you know, we love to shame, we love to shut out and ignore and write off as like they are a problem. But in reality, when people are fighting these kinds of things, and especially those who like continue to do it, like it is courageous, it is far more difficult than you realize.
Yeah.
Especially when you start working the whole neurodivergence thing in there.
Yeah.
Because what people don't understand is like when you've got like the whole non-typical brain, non-neurotypical,
mm-hmm.
ADHD, at least for me specifically, wow, that's a really emotional brain.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Whoa. So if you like experience all of your emotions and then you like if you're a neurotypical person, you know what they feel like. All right, well, let's kick them up. Let's kick them up a notch. Mm-hmm. And then let's see how easy it is to ignore that emotion or suppress it or to not act on what feels more comfortable to put you at ease. Because you don't always want to feel those things to that intensity. It can be really difficult.
Yes.
It can be great sometimes.
Sometimes.
But it can also be really detrimental, and it changes how you live.
The reason it's so hard is that when you have a neuroatypical situation, be it trauma, be it ADHD, everybody gets the rule book except for you.
Yeah.
You know, everybody gets the instructions on what they should do except for you.
Yeah.
And you don't have the instructions, and you don't have the rule book, and you don't understand why everybody else knows how to do things.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it feels like. You're like, I swear.
How did I miss that?
Yeah.
Right. When in fact, as long as you're judging how you feel on the inside mm-hmm. by how people look on the outside, you're always going to lose.
Yeah.
And again, we live in a social media world where nobody's posting online the horrible things they're dealing with. They're posting the beautiful things.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a highlight reel.
Yeah. And it's so hard.
It is so hard. This, like all of this information is so important. I hope that if anyone has any questions that you at least can start looking for, you know, your local therapist, you reach for some of these books that we talked about, The Body Keeps the Score. If you don't want to see a highlight reel, you can go to Hattie Hawks on TV, on Facebook. You will see more of the reel because I want people to know that there's no reason to be ashamed of these difficulties. You are empowered when you learn more about it and when you understand and when you know that there's somebody out there. The both of us are out here. We understand you. We hear you. We love you. And we are sending you only the best vibes and prayers and all the good things that we can muster. So get that information. Know that you are not alone. There's a lot of hope on the horizon. And there are like-minded individuals who are going to be there for you. So Dr. Yeager, thank you so much once again.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Take care. Love each other.